Let's call the Healthcare Cost Containment Task Force to order. Senator Kelly's here, Senator Duncan. Here. Michelle Castaneda.
Here.
Bruce Cumming.
Here.
Don Hitchcock.
Here.
Mike Navarre.
Here.
Mark Boyer.
Here.
Barbara Huff.
Here.
Greg O'Clary's at Ketchikan. Karen Perdue.
Here.
Okay, I'm going to ask Senator Duncan to chair the meeting today because I've got a 2 o'clock at the governor's office. And Jim, where do you want to go from here?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think what we should do is kind of review where we have come so far with the recommendations of Mr. Malik's, and perhaps we can just go back and review from Mr. Malik's viewpoint and also from the administration's viewpoint, status on number one, the premium taxes, and number two, the extended liability reserves, to get that firmed up into whether there's agreement on how that can be utilized. Press, Bruce, did you want to speak for the administration, or would you like Mr. Andrews to?
We have Commissioner.
Commissioner Andrews.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the two items in question, the $1.3 million for the premium tax credit and the $2.4 million for the extended liability reserve, we're prepared to support finding some way to utilize both of those items to reduce the current year cost of the supplemental appropriations bill, that portion of it that relates to employee health insurance in any case. As I understand those two items, just for the record, if you will, the $1.3 million is a twofold transaction that has the Aetna returning monies to us in the amount of $1.3 million sometime in the near future that would otherwise have been returned to the state sometime in fiscal year 90. And the other part of the transaction is that we would advance to Aetna before the end of this fiscal year a similar amount of money that would otherwise have been transferred to them in FY90. This exchange of earlier transactions renders both parties harmless in the sense that the float cancels the other out. It doesn't cost either party anything that they would not have occurred anyway, or the costs balance themselves out. It's real money. It's available by that transaction. It's available to use in this year. It's legal, and it doesn't do the state any harm. The $2.4 million for the extended liability reserve, the idea is that the state would take back into its own custody that $2.4 million, and along with it take the responsibility for the liability that reserve supported. That liabilities cannot be exactly identified at this time by the nature of the claims that would eventually have to be paid. We could then spend that reserve now, but that would leave unfunded a future year liability, as long as everybody understands that that there will be a future cost down the road in some probably very similar amount of money, that $2.4 million would be available this year as well. As to how to use it in to reduce the cost of the supplemental appropriations bill, we need to be careful that we do not overestimate the impact on the health insurance cost needs. Let me say a word about why I have this concern. If this total now of $3.7 million is used to reduce a May or June's premium payment to Aetna, the way the accounting system and payroll deduction system works, that benefit would accrue to all the state agencies in each office in proportion to the personal services cost of each office. That is to say, the way this thing works is each payroll period, a certain number of dollars is collected from each office's payroll and put into a pot of money that's used to pay the premiums. in order to mitigate the effect of having a smaller supplemental appropriation for health insurance, that money would have to be backed back out into each agency's appropriation. The problem with that is that the need for the supplemental is not uniform amongst all offices. You know what I mean by that? It's kind of hard to say, but it's easier to understand than it is to say, really. For instance, in the Division of Labor Relations, for one reason or another, there was no part of the health insurance supplemental that was tagged to go to that division. They had had some vacancies and whatnot. They don't need any of that money. They aren't on the list, Allison, that you put together that breaks down the supplemental. Other offices are indeed quite short. So we need to set the supplemental appropriation bill up in such a way that leaves the OMB some latitude in redirecting this $3.7 million so that it gets to the place where it's needed. And I don't see that as an insurmountable problem. I think Allison already has on paper a way to do that in the proposal she laid before the House Finance Committee, House Finance Subcommittee, this last weekend. I think I covered it all.
Thank you. Any questions of Commissioner Andrews? Comments, Representative Boyer?
Are there any other additional ways that we can reduce that supplemental? Say, for instance, if you had an interest in a caucus that wanted to reduce it by an additional 10 or 15 or 20 or perhaps even 30% over the next 2.5 months, is there a way that we can do that, that you can accomplish that without layoffs? I mean, is there some point that we can have additional savings through non-filling of vacant positions or whatever that we can extract additional dollars out of the supplemental?
No, sir, I don't think there is. Believe me, there's been a lot of gnashing of teeth about that, trying to find such a way to avoid the supplemental. Avoid the layoffs that would result from lack of funding of the supplemental. And that is largely how the general fund number got from 15 million down to 11.8, which is the latest estimate of the general fund portion of it compiled by OMB. Beyond that, I think we have to count on these refinancing schemes to get the number any smaller.
Mr. Chairman, can we discriminate in how we push an additional reduction back through? You suggested that that's exactly what we're going to have to do with this 3.7, is pushing it back through to those agencies which need the ability to pay this premium. It sounded to me like you could likewise go in and discriminate in the way that you have whatever amount of layoffs it is that you might have if you reduce this $8 million liability now to $6 million or $6.5 million, whatever X would be.
I suppose that's possible. I have not been party to any discussions of how that might work, or I don't even know that idea has been floated.
Thank you.
Our overall objective is to avoid the whole layoff problem.
I agree. I understand. Commissioner Anders, can we just review very generally the general fund request for the supplemental? The original request that was made was around $15 million, is that correct? General funds?
General fund portion, correct.
Around $15 million. The figure that's presently before the House Finance Committee, because of the tightening up, holding vacant positions, doing the other steps that was talked about here, is now down to what, 11.8 approximately?
As I recall, that's correct.
Okay, and with this 3.7 then that we're talking here with the premium tax reserve, or premium tax and the extended liability reserve, that figure would come down to about 8.1 or 8.2, somewhere in that neighborhood,
right.
The general fund,
right.
The supplemental. So
which
basically we've almost half
over
that
half, right. So
from the original request. I just wanted confirmation if those numbers were
correct.
Right. They're not accurate. I mean, they may be off, you know, but it's
rounded off to the million anyway. That's my understanding, adoption of these two proposals would reduce the general fund portion of the supplemental request to about $8.2 million.
Yeah. The only comment I'd make, it not for the extended liabilities, a little different, but the premium taxes would otherwise go to the general fund.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
The premium taxes would otherwise go to the general fund. I mean, we can either use it as to fund a deficit in next year's budget or add it to reduce the supplemental in this case, but it's still a general fund draw, so the actual general fund monies needed is 8.4, but for purposes of accounting, we can show that it's only 8.1.
I'm not sure the numbers come out exactly, but the general idea is absolutely correct. This is general fund money.
Right.
It would be general fund program receipts. Just real money, right?
Any other comments or questions? Mr. Medick, do you have anything you want to add?
I think it's very correct in two respects, the premium tax refund and the extended liability reserve. The only other area that was addressed by the interim meeting of the task force on April 3rd was minimum, continuing to look at minimum premium as an alternative. And with everything else going on, I don't think there's been a lot of time to focus on that. And I don't know if administration's had a chance to really look at that very well right now.
We have only to the extent to come to the conclusion that there's no way we could realize any current fiscal year savings from that.
Any other comments on those two items?
Well, Mr. Chairman, on that issue, though, is it the intent of the Department of Administration to pursue that policy, though, beginning the next fiscal year, or are we going to wait till December or November, sometime later, before we come to that conclusion?
Whether or not to adopt the minimum premium approach?
Yes.
My expectation is that once the other fires settle down, we will look hard at that in conjunction with the rest of the package and see what of it works. And the reason I don't automatically feel optimistic about it is that to the extent that that approach is a modified form of self-insurance for the state, then we have to put our insurance risk hat on for a moment and figure out whether in our perception this plan is insurable. I have some reason to ask the question, because last time we went out to bid, we only had one respondent to the RFP. And when asked why that was, the other people in the industry said, we don't think your plan is insurable. So I think I have to then ask that question myself. If we're going to entertain a motion to take on any form of self-insurance plan, then I have to somehow figure out whether we're incurring a risk that professionals in the industry shied away from. I have to ask all those questions then, and that'll take some doing. My hope is that there will be enough other modifications in the plan structure along the lines of the list at the bottom of your agenda today, and perhaps some of the other changes that were discussed a year ago, that we can in fact render it insurable, and in that case, minimum premium or some other version of self-insurance might well make sense. But that's going to take some time to sort all that out.
Mr. Chairman, you want to follow up? Just to follow up, the only reason I pursue that at all is that someone did approach me and suggest that the state could even pick up the difference in an increased premium, say a $3,000, or not premium, but a $3,000 or whatever some higher deductible is, pick up that difference where it occurs and keep the deductible for the employee at $100. And still save money and probably encourage more than one bidder or more than one interested party to come in and either administer the program or however we might structure it, but and still save substantive dollars or substantial dollars. And so I'm interested in that whole approach. Don't know if it's possible. Know that it's a lot to kind of chew on in the next 2.5 months, but would hope that we'd look at it carefully.
Well, we're suffering, of course, the Valdez pain, even in the Department of Administration. It is a real and pressing distraction that has to command first priority. So, but I think after another 20, how many days now, we'll have the time to focus the attention on these questions that they warrant. And we will all retain an interest in having some resolution to that, I'm sure.
Mr. Chairman, looking at just the immediate problem we face, which is the fiscal year 89 supplemental, I would move that the task force accept the two recommendations of $1.3 million and $2.4 million real dollars to reduce the supplemental request to $8.1 million.
I would second that.
Okay. Is there any discussion on the motion? Karen?
Rounded to the nearest million. I mean,
how about the nearest 100,000?
Whatever that is.
It's not like the old days, Karen. My understanding from the motion,
100,000 is our minimum.
These are general figures based on Commissioner Andrews' statement of 11.8, which is presently before House Finance, and then you take the 3.7 off, which brings it down to 8.1 or 8.2. So there may be $100,000 or whatever, but that's the general. Any discussion on that? Any objection? Okay, not the motion passes. Let's go on to the next one on the agenda then, the minimum premium. We'll just get a report on the status of that. That seemed from the last meeting to be a longer-term discussion and perhaps more complicated than the first two, but if we have an update from perhaps Mr. Medic and Commissioner, you're welcome to stay at the table if you want to participate.
I really would ask to be excused. Chief Staff asked me to come
here
in a hurry here in lunch. So.
Thank you very much for coming.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
With respect to the minimum premium, I think that is something that administration needs a chance to look at closely, given their own time frame. Minimum premium or some alternative of self-funding is something that's a viable issue at this time. It's been looked at in some previous respects. Commissioner Andrews has assured us or has given us intentions that they're going to continue to look at that and keep it as a high priority. So I think that's moving on the right track.
Any comments, Barbara?
Actually, I had a question, but I think the commissioner asked it, but I just want to reiterate his response there. With the implementation of some of these cost containment measures, is your belief then also that the state's health plan would become a much more viable or opportunity out there for more companies to bid on?
Well, in any case, insurance companies look at being able to assess the risk and being able to cover charge a premium to at least cover the risk, and usually with some profit. Or the risk so that they can contain it within the premium of some scope. With some of the changes that we're looking at, cost containment, that's managing the risk, also looking at how you pay for that risk. In an RFP process, you might go out and say, this is our plan design, we look at these changes, and we'd like to see funding alternatives of these to see what to try to attract such a diverse group of bidders. But generally speaking, to answer your question, yes.
What if they went one step further and just went completely self-insured? Would this open it up even further?
I've been contacted by some vendors that have said, yes, we would look at it in a fully self-funded situation. That means the state's on the risk completely, and that would open up some more competition on that level. Depending on whether or not the state's in a position to want or to realize that risk is another story.
Any other comments on the minimum premium? Minimum premium. Let's move to the cost containment recommendations that were made. Perhaps we could ask first for Mr. Medic to review the, I think you had three or four cost containment steps that you had identified and proposed last time. And we were going to let the unions take a look at those, and then we're going to come back and discuss in this meeting. Would you mind running through those first?
I really think the start of the cost containment would be using utilization review, outpatient pre-certification, managed second surgical opinion, and possibly managed health, mental health, using that as some core with input from all the entities, the bargaining units, the administration, to develop a package that works for the employees and for the state, not just for today or tomorrow, but for long term. And that's the intended impact is for FY90 and later. And I know that the unions have been having some discussion about this and have been looking at this, I think, somewhat closely. Maybe we could get some additional update from them as to where they feel it is.
Okay. Mark?
I guess on that line, I don't think we're probably off the agenda here. We did have a meeting this morning, and a suggestion that I had brought forth, and I know we have ASEA, and also we did talk with O'Clery this morning, so we've got that particular union as well as 71 and the rest of them that are involved in this particular process immediately with the state. What I would like to do to kind of wrap up the second portion of this agenda as well is make a motion, which I do have in writing, so that if we need to get photocopies for everybody to take a look at, go ahead and read it into the record and then we get passed around. But I think in general what it's doing is tying in with, I guess, the comment that Jeff has made, looking at the various cost containment issues that have been bounced around. I guess I feel real comfortable speaking on this and advocating this process because myself did go through this with the municipality of Anchorage. It was a very, very successful process, one that both of the parties bought into, and we've got some happy folks out there as far as the employees that are under that particular program. And I think the process that the state and unions involved here are looking at, that's going to be very, very key because whatever kind of changes are implemented out there, everybody's got to be a part of that process to look at a positive implementation. And part of the motion that we're looking at laying on the table here would actually tie that all together and help get everybody on the right direction here.
Why don't we just hold until we get your motion back then, unless there's some further discussion, so we look at the motion, and then perhaps if you want to offer it, we can discuss it at that point. Were there any other comments prior to doing that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've got to run downstairs for a meeting, but when you plan your next meeting, I hope it's sometime after this session, so you might want to try to get a consensus when people can be available.
Okay.
When's the session available?
I had to ask.
May 9th.
Yeah, 19th is probably safe.
April 3rd.
Not very. April
3rd. Well, the oil still set us back.
I'm on that.
Read this motion into the record. I move that the task force adopt the health care cost containment measures submitted in the Gallagher March 29, 1989 report as follows. Utilization review, outpatient pre-certification, managed second surgical opinion, managed mental health, high-risk pregnancy management, on-site concurrent review, wellness programs, mail order prescription drug plan. And in addition to that, there were two items that we had originally discussed, at least within labor, and I had thought that the entire task force had talked about them, and that was to include the hospital audits and participant incentive plan. And that the task force recommend the state and the prospective unions address these immediately as a priority issue in an attempt to reduce cost for FY89/90.
Okay. Making that as a motion?
Yes.
Okay, we have the motion up. Any discussion or questions on what Barbara is proposing?
Mr. Chairman? Just a question, and I'm not suggesting an amendment to the question here, but one item I think would be interesting to look at is what would occur to our premium generally if the state were to pick up essentially the difference between a much higher deductible, say a $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000, whatever X would be, a much higher deductible, to bring the overall premium down and pay that difference between that increased deductible and what the employee would effectively pay. And the idea would be that you wouldn't increase the deductible for the employee at this point, that what you would do is increase the deductible for the premium or for the plan on a per employee basis, and the state would assume the liability for the difference. And I think that in the way it's been presented to me, that you might find some substantial savings in the overall premium cost to the state. And I think that it might be something that I'd like to have them look at in the short term. If we're going to look at these other items and recommend that the state and the unions address them immediately, I think that that's something that we might want to add to the list. And I'm not sure how that might be phrased so that it's kind of not or neutral and non-offensive to all parties as possible. Mr. Hitchcock, do you have any idea how that how we might phrase that? I don't know the terms of art that are involved.
I'm through the chair. I'm not a health care expert, as you probably know. I think that your suggestion has viability in that it provides an area of insurance that, let's say, is insurable. I don't see, when you have a program that's based on experience, I don't see that in the long run that is going to save the state money, dollars, per se. But it would shift the cost.
From
the company or from the employee or whatever to the state for that area of retention you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Or deductible.
Maybe we can ask Mr. Malik, could you comment on your suggestion?
Yeah, the suggestion is something that we've seen in the history of healthcare as a partial self-insured or partial self-funded concept, very popular about 4 or 5 years ago. But in fact, it wouldn't be in this scope of cost containment. It would be when they're looking at minimum premium or the funding alternatives of their plan, how they structure the premium. And in fact, he's right in the sense that when you have a fully experience-rated plan, as you do, dollars paid in versus dollars paid out will generate your premium cost. What you need to do is manage the dollars being paid out. by the funding alternatives. There are many different funding alternatives you could use, and that's, I think, where administration is now going. Maybe you could comment on that, Bruce, too, is that that's their next step is to look at how do we pay for this plan, while these issues are what do we pay and how do we contain that cost. They're a little different, although they intertwine each other, they are a little separate.
Yeah, if I may, Mr. Chairman. Although I certainly don't take any offense at this motion, I would like the record to reflect that the state and various sundry unions have been aggressively reviewing most, if not all, of these issues for the last 2 years, essentially without resolution at this point, but there's been an awful lot of work done. And it's been in two respects, the monetary contribution that the state would make to a plan, and then given that contribution, whatever it may be, what the plan would look like. And what you suggest sounds like a form of self-insurance. I certainly, that's not a concept that I've heard before, and I think it merits some exploration. But at this time, where we are attempting to focus our attention in the bargaining process, it's at the level of contribution to be paid by the state, and then within that, what the benefit structure would look like. And I would like the record to reflect that the parties have not been idle in examining many of these.
Barbara?
I've got maybe a point of clarification here. I've got a motion on the table here. There's not been a second, but yet we seem
actually,
to be going into discussion, and I...
Second's not needed, actually.
Okay.
As far as the rules we're working under, but the motion is on the table. I don't know if you had an amendment to the motion.
I did not. I was curious about that issue, and I understand that what the state would be doing, you'd see perhaps a reduction in premium as it would relate to providing for major medical coverage to the employees, and the state essentially becomes the provider of all non-major medical items. And so I'm interested in the issue, but I appreciate that there's...
Yeah.
Perhaps we can address that as a separate motion.
Yes.
I'd like to proceed with this, and I understand what Mr. Cummings pointed. Perhaps I could ask Barbara or even Michelle, as the unions were involved, I guess, in putting together this motion. What does it mean, what's the bottom statement mean in the task force recommend the state and respective unions address these immediately as a priority issue and attempt, what does that mean?
Senator, maybe if I can address it, correct me if I'm wrong here. I guess where I'm going back is what I have gone through with the municipality, and I don't take any offense to the 2 years that the parties have been trying to reach some sort of agreement. I don't want to get into the middle of it. I don't know what's been going on. But I guess what we wanted to see happen here, at least from our perspective, the way that we were able to get through the process was to take health care cost containment, take it over here, set it down, and deal with that particular issue, separate from all the other negotiating processes out there, recognizing that ASEA is currently in contract negotiations. We've got some substantial problems out there. They do need to be addressed. I don't think anybody has 2 more years to be dealing through that process. The intent of my motion was to take the cost containment issues, put them on the table, and have the unions and the administration sit down and go through those particular areas where they can agree on. Their conceptual agreement on the utilization review, which there are a lot of items on here that I think can be put together and be put together rather quickly, and, of course, for the education process of the membership and so on and so forth. I think you've got at least an avenue here to make something real positive come out of this process. I'm just real concerned that this task force will disband, the union will go one way, the administration will go another way, and what have we accomplished here? And no offense to either of the parties sitting here, but I think it was the intent of the motion was to assure and maybe some sort of report or something coming back to the task force as to what has been accomplished either in a 15 or a 30-day or a 60-day period of time so that the onus is on both parties to come up with a project.
Michelle, do you concur basically with Barbara's?
Yes, I want to make it clear that we do not want to take this out of the bargaining process. We want to make it a priority. We want to deal with this issue immediately, today, tomorrow. But we don't want it to remove it from the table. But we are willing to put our entire focus on health care and resolving these issues and discussing cost containment immediately. And we are willing to come back at a time period and report to this committee.
Maybe if I add to the intent was not to remove it from the negotiating process, but to put it as a very important separate item to be resolved in any way.
I think what she's asking is that we make sure that we expedite this review and the savings that can be realized. And she did leave one important factor out, though, that while the administration is going one way and the union is going another way, legislature will go a different way.
There's already three directions, right? And actually, there's 60 directions in the legislature. Mr. Chairman, did you have a point?
Well, I think Barbara's points are real well taken as far as addressing an immediate, and I'm particularly concerned with the correlation between this effort and the FY90 budget process. So I don't know what sort of timeline ought to be put on this amendment, but I suggest we discuss putting a report aid back to the task force, at least where the parties are. And substantively, there's only one set of negotiations going on at this time that deals with this issue. It's a vast majority of employees, but we don't have 12 different labor organizations actively negotiating these issues at the moment.
I would concur there should be a timeline. In fact, my thought, although Senator Kelly said he hoped the next meeting would be after the session, so it was my thought, unless it would be an impossibility, that we should have a report back on this particular cost containment item prior to that happening, prior to the legislature hearing.
Yes.
It would be a very short meeting and done by teleconference, even if we had to, with Barbara and others.
I know that the state and ASEA have agreed to a negotiation schedule, and I don't have that in front of me. I don't know. I know we're meeting the rest of this week, and I don't know beyond that when we're meeting, so it may be an impossibility to return with a report unless it fits in with the schedule that's been set forth. If not, then maybe we can meet. We can alter the schedule and meet. But at this point, I couldn't say without looking at our schedule and talking to our negotiating committee.
I certainly commit to the state and the appropriate schedule modifications at this time. So whatever we can work out with the ASEA, I've used the existing schedule as a plan, but like all plans,
it's be modified. Right, I agree.
Karen?
I want to say that I think that this is a positive step in the sense that these items here, for instance, audits, are things that maybe can be easily dispensed with. There are certainly things that, I mean, when we set out as a goal of this committee is to look at cost containment measures that wouldn't hit the pocketbook of the employee. And there are some things on here, I think, that are clearly in that category. In fact, all of these are that way. So perhaps they would be quickly and easily dealt with.
From the union's point of view, I don't see that any of these are going to take a whole lot of dialogue. I think we basically just need to agree that we agree that this is the way we're going to set forth implementing these. And I don't think that, I know that our union has, our parent union has adopted many of these cost containment measures all over the country, so it's not a new concept to them, and they are agreeable.
Yeah, is it anticipated that we would back out $6.5 million from the FY90 budget? That's the dollar amount that I think was tagged to these particular cost containment items. And if so, does that provide enough opportunity in FY89 for those negotiations or agreements to take place so that you don't actually result in a short fund in the 100 line that results in layoffs?
So we just get a supplemental.
My respond to that. I think that could be inferred, however, until there's agreement between the unions and the executive branch, all these can be done that made up to $6 million. Those may not all happen. But from what I hear Michelle saying and what she said at the last meeting, as I recall, based on the initial presentation by Mr. Malik and the discussion with the unions, those first three or four items, the health line, the pre-certification, whatever else was there, didn't seem to be insurmountable cost containment steps. If those are something they could possibly agree with. My understanding was Aetna and Mr. Malik together had identified a possible $6 million reduction. Is that correct? If those were put into effect?
Right. I think the next step is, as you've outlined here, is to get a general accord as to how you want to proceed, the fundamentals and the general design of it, and then we can ask the providers of service, Aetna, and how it's going to be done, what the actual impact would be on the premium. In the past, they've run through all these gyrations of costing out this option and this option without having a clear grasp of what do you really want to do. And now with that, then we can come back, or with them, can come back and give you a definitive number as to the impact.
Perhaps this motion could be worded such that we would ask, as far as the timeline goes, we would ask the administration and the ASEA to put together a schedule to talk about this, make that a priority to do that, to get back then to the chairman, Senator Kelly, with that schedule, and when we could then have another meeting scheduled to review the results. It's pretty tough, I guess, because you don't know when your negotiating schedule is for us to tell you to be back by May 8th, right, or May 5th, and really get, have any insurance that can be done. But it really depends probably on when your folks are going to be in town and you can set up a schedule. But I think it's clear that it should be a priority and that perhaps we could request that in the next day or two you work out that schedule for addressing these issues and get back to us. Would that be fair?
Mr. Chairman, since the parties happen to be together this week, I presume that should not be difficult to talk now. And I just have no objection to that. If I may, in response to Representative Boyer, again, the correlation between what happens in negotiation and the budget, I would like to emphasize that what we've seen on all of these areas are cost containment estimates, and we've already received some information disputing, if you will, the accuracy of the estimate. So you don't really know, in one sense, what the effect is going to be until long after you've made the changes, and that makes it difficult to budget predicated on those changes and any certainty about what the actual effect will be. So the legislature is going to have to do what it has to do, and we'll try and respond accordingly.
But we are very clear that if we were to implement utilization review, there would be substantial savings immediately. So, time to wait.
Yep. Let's move on with it. We have no problem putting a schedule together and getting back to Senator Kelly with that.
And perhaps if we could ask him to get back to him by the end of the week with that schedule.
Do our best.
I think it is important to try to process. Could you incorporate that into your motion, Barbara?
Sure.
I'm not sure you need to restate the whole thing. I guess just down at the bottom, what we're talking about is a priority issue that we're asking ASEA and the administration to put together a schedule as to when they can address this and inform the chairman by the end of the week so that we can schedule another meeting.
Yeah, isn't there some administrative work that needs to be done by both the administration and by Aetna in order to implement some of this? And mm-hmm. So they ought to be involved in that discussion, I think.
Sure. I would assume the administration. I think that's a very good point. Yes, sir. Any other discussion on this motion?
Could I make one?
Karen?
Ask one question on the hospital audit line. By this, do you mean claims audits? Would you include in this, as a friendly amendment, audits of physician services also? Is that your intent?
Provider audits?
Provider audits. Do you mean if you mean the audit of the claims, right?
Right.
You didn't mean to exclude. You didn't mean to only include hospitals in the
No, actually, I guess from our own personal experience, that has been one probably major substantial area where we have found problems just in billing for things that were not utilized during the process or whatever.
We certainly saw that in too. But I just wondered.
Just for the record. These are just among the things we will discuss for cost containment. There could be others. This is not it. This isn't the beginning of and the end. So,
okay.
This list may be expanded.
This list may very well be expanded.
So, are we? I'm not sure will we ever adopt this motion.
We haven't.
I don't think we have. Is everyone comfortable? Do they understand what the motion is and what the request is, Dave?
If I can make a recommendation, you want to have as kind of a written record. If you read that last sentence, the task force recommends the state respective unions address this immediately as a priority issue in an attempt to reduce costs and report back to this, the task force.
Well, first, yes, and this is getting a little bit complicated. I'm not sure how we word it, but the first report back, first request was that they work out a schedule to sit down and address these. Report back to the chairman by the end of the week what that schedule is, when they are going to be addressing these issues, because I think the task force wants it as a priority. And then, based on that schedule, we can then determine when they can even make a recommendation how long it would take them to come to resolving the issues and to report back to the task force. And on that basis, we can set the meeting. Pretty open-ended, but the problem is we don't know when they can get together, I guess, basically. Bruce, do you have any other suggestion on that?
No, of course, it's easier for us. We're here.
Yeah.
So I don't think at this point it's essentially Michelle confirming for principles on their
I think there's clear understanding. The bottom line is everybody has this as a priority, wants it to be addressed as quickly as possible, and would like to report back to the task force as quickly as possible. If it could be done before the end of the legislative session, I think that would be the most beneficial. If for some reason, because of schedules, et cetera, it can't be, then that's understood also. But I think the intent is that we try to get that report back as quickly as possible. And realizing the legislature is pretty busy in these last 15 days, 25 days or whatever it is, we wouldn't want to have a long meeting, but if we get a report back, I think it would be worthwhile having.
Mr. Chair, just maybe a point of clarification here. The intent would not be that the parties would necessarily report back with what they had already completed, but just a status report on how things were going. Is that basic?
If they completed something, they report back on that.
Well, that would even be more wonderful.
That would be even more wonderful, right? I mean, I'm not prejudging, right, that they'll what they'll do, but whatever.
It's a possibility.
Any other discussion on the motion?
No.
Mike?
I guess maybe it's not on the motion. I'm just wondering about the information that's going to go out to the union members and things like that. Will that be part of this discussion on, you know, the information on utilization of the program and how to help cut down on utilization?
Did you say, would union members be involved in this?
Well, it would be a notice to employees on utilization of the health care plan statewide, you know, the things that we discussed earlier about not going in on the weekend if you can wait till Monday, or going in on Friday afternoon instead of Saturday morning or Sunday afternoon, those types of things. Just, is that information available from, and can it be?
I guess the way I would envision this working, that would be something that would be worked out through that discussions with the administration.
Okay. I think we passed the motion. You did not object, right?
Right.
No objection. That's taken care of. Right? The next on the agenda was a discussion of a couple of items. Mr. Melick had recommended two amendments to the present statute. Both of those have been introduced in both the House and the Senate. Just a status report. The premium tax amendment has been reported to the Rules Committee and is ready to go to the floor. The other amendment has not yet moved out of the Finance Committee. Perhaps, Representative Navarro, do you have a report on the House action on these two items?
Yeah, the premium tax one is on the floor tomorrow.
It's on the floor tomorrow?
The premium tax, I'm sorry.
Premium tax
amendment is on the floor tomorrow in the House.
Which means we should have that through in plenty of time. The one change that had to be made in legislation, hope you pick that up, was the effective date January 1, 1989 instead of effective date.
I'm not sure.
You might want to check that. Is that correct, Mr. Mellon?
Yes. Yes.
In order to make that work. Any other comments on those two? Pooling legislation is on this agenda, and I guess I would only comment that there has been a bill introduced to accomplish that. I've introduced a bill, and I've never seen a bill. 228. Senate Bill 228. I don't know that this bears any discussion now. What I would like, though, is for the administration, perhaps Mr. Malik, also the union members, to take a look at that legislation and begin reviewing it. It's there for an item that can be looked at during the interim and discussed by the task force, and hopefully maybe come back to the next at the beginning of the next legislative session with a recommendation as to whether that legislation is something that should be pursued or how it might be structured. But it's on the table. It has been introduced. My discussions with Senator Kelly is something we want to discuss during the interim and be looking at. Any comments on that? Next item on the agenda is audit, and I'm not sure.
I think that was talking about the claims audit and also the provider audits that already had been bantered around earlier. I think administration and mostly administration, because there's been some discussion about looking at the benefit and cost analysis of doing an audit of the program, how they're picking up eligibility, how the program's running, how claims are being paid, simply for a comfort level and to evaluate at what depth do they want to do an audit, whether it's an initial audit or a full scope audit, and what the cost of that is versus what are the anticipated benefits or savings of that audit. And I think the administration is looking to that at some point. Also keeping in mind it's a high priority item, but not necessarily at the top of the list. Is that your feeling, Bruce?
Frankly, in the urgency of dealing with other matters in the last 2 weeks, I have not paid any attention at all to this item. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe we've actually done any work at all on this yet.
think the intention was that you were going to give us some advice.
Right. The advice is at this point, is that we think administration should go ahead and look at the benefit and cost analysis of an audit. We'd be happy to participate with them in the design of such. In looking at, A, what the scope should be, B, should it be done internally or externally, and then how that would impact the overall plan. A plan of this size generally goes through an audit on some regular basis, and I don't think that has come to the table as yet. I think you might want to ask administration to look into it further and look at what how they want to proceed with that issue. Yes?
I think one thing would be if an audit was a good idea, that resources would need to be available, and it was determined to be cost beneficial. And you know, if you could recover $1 million or $400,000 and your audit costs you $50,000, you may want to look at that item this year. Yeah.
Or maybe we could ask them to have a motion to ask the administration to look at that, come back with a recommendation at the next task force meeting, also identifying what might be required to conduct such an audit, although unfortunately, we'll probably be out of session by then. So whatever extra you need, you'll just have to suck up somehow, right? But, I mean, I don't know how else to handle that because of the timing of this, but perhaps the administration could spend some time looking at this and coming back with a recommendation as to whether it would be cost beneficial.
Let me clarify that.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Are we discussing auditing actual records of whose eligibility, or are we talking about a provider audit?
Provider.
Okay.
I don't see a problem with pursuing that post-haste center. I have no idea what the outcome would be, of course. If we just simply haven't gotten to that one.
Barbara,
do
you want to answer?
Actually, it was tied in with the eligibility question, and I guess I wanted to ask a question before any type of a motion was made. Is there any way that in going through the auditing process that you could actually do a provider as well as the eligibility? I guess, as an outsider here, I'm real concerned about the question that has come up of who is eligible, who's not, that is receiving benefits under the plan. And I would assume that this is definitely a priority item for the administration as well to get some sort of hold. We're looking at cost containment measures in one arena, but yet we may indeed have some other things going on in another. Is there any way that could be combined, or would it even be appropriate to do it as a separate process?
Well, if I could answer that, I think there's really three audit-type environments here. One it would be eligibility, enrollment. That, how do we find out who's on our plan? Are they on the plan, and are we paying the right claims? The second part of that, which should tie together with that, I think, is a claim audit as to are they paying the claims at the appropriate level for the appropriate amount, how fast are they doing them, that general claim audit. And then aside from that is a provider audit, which could be tied to the first two, but may not generally be a hospital audit or provider audit. So I think administration wants to look at what works best for them and what areas they feel that they have the largest concern with, and also some areas might have a larger cost impact, a directed cost impact, and be able to look at them separately and maybe combined in some fashion.
Any comments on that, Karen?
I guess then I would propose that for purposes of discussion, that the administration examine all three, but come back to this group with the information that they found. That
could we add to that maybe a time specific when that would occur?
At our next meeting.
Which we don't know when that is.
I didn't want to get into that.
Yeah. Okay, is that the form of a motion?
Yes, that was a motion.
Everyone understand? Karen was proposing. Any objection? Okay. The other items, part two of the agenda, I think have been covered more or less, right?
Yes.
With the motion made by Barbara, these are cost containment steps. Is that correct, Jeff?
Most of them are cost containment steps, or have been discussed within this. As I look through it again very quickly.
The only one that is not on there is G. The one we have not discussed is G.
Is which one?
G.
Managed mental health?
No. RNC profiles. These are not, that's not an issue that is currently.
Oh, G, RNC profiles.
G is currently on the list of items that the union administration is discussing or would be covered in some kind of an audit report.
Okay.
Could we have an explanation of what that is?
That's back to the reasonable and customary profile that you, it's the level that you set for a particular service, the maximum allowable charge, or what allowance that is on that charge. Currently, it's updated every 6 months. It could be updated on some other basis, either once a year instead of every 6 months. The theory being is that if the provider is charging up to the RNC cap or maybe even a little bit above that, if you slow your inflation on that RNC level, if you slow down how fast you accept or how fast it goes up, and they continue to charge above that, that it's passed on to the employee direct usually, or in some cases, the doctor, or I shouldn't say doctor, but the provider may say with their patient may not charge that amount of money over it. Generally speaking, it falls back over to the patient themselves. The RNC profiles have gotten a lot of discussion in the past. I don't know what the feeling is from the union representatives as to where they want to proceed with that.
Just one more comment, and then I'll serve my comments. It seems to me as though it's an item that we don't want to entirely drop, but maybe something that we could look at during the interim.
I think it's a possibility that that would be one of the other items that wasn't listed that would be discussed between the parties when we're discussing these other cost containment items.
All right. I just didn't want it to
pull yeah. yeah, but it was just something else.
I guess then the understanding is that may be an item that you would be discussing with the administration as a result of Barbara's motion. Is that
yes.
correct?
Yes.
Okay. Any further discussion on that? Okay. Anything else that you would like to bring up at this moment? What we need to, I guess, as I understand where we're at then, we're going to be waiting for a report back from the administration and ASEA on a schedule to talk about the cost containment steps that can be taken. Based on that schedule and when they think they may be able to have some type of response back, we'll set up another meeting to discuss primarily the cost containment steps at that time. Ms. Michelle?
I'd like to propose a motion that's somewhat overlaps with the one that Karen made, but I wanted to make, there is a difference, that the administration, this is the motion, that the administration develop a procedure to capture the current eligibility for employees and dependent enrollment in the state's health care plan, not just audit, but maybe restructure the way that it's been done in the past. We still have a real concern with the enrollment verification.
Okay. Any comments on that, Bruce?
Chairman, I certainly think we can take another look at it. There are some difficulties in getting the demographics that we really like to have with regard to the marital status of employees, their dependents. These are privacy issues that, as an employer, in the normal course of things, we have no right to have to think about these against the classic statute. It's not to say that the idea should be dismissed, but task force, you know, going in, that there are problems associated with trying to get employees to provide us with certain kinds of personal information.
It's my understanding, I've been a trustee on another trust fund before, and before anyone could get coverage before their spouse and their dependent, they had to fill out an enrollment form, and it just seems like something that needs to be done, and I was never aware at that time as a trustee that there was a problem with confidentiality. That's.
I mean, we have enrollment forms as well.
That have.
Yes, but when it comes down to an ongoing monitoring of the process.
Whether or not the status has changed.
Jeff, were you going to?
Yeah, that. I would envision normally in the scope of an audit, you look at the procedural things that are going on in the plan, and that would be something that in a normal audit that you would pick up to see, spot check to see how accurate those records are and if they need to be updated or what the method of data capture is, and then also dealing with the issues of the practicality. I mean, if you have to go out and re-enroll the whole group, there's a cost and a confusion associated with that, and you may not want to take that tap. It may not be worth it in the long run.
But if an audit is done, it's your understanding that it will have a good...
Right. Uh-huh. That's the reason for the audit. If you have problems, to find out where they are and give you some suggestions.
Well, I'll withdraw the motion until we get some response back from administration about the audit.
Can we part of you withdrawing?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Now, kind of recap, that my understanding is we're going to proceed on this cost containment steps. I assume Mr. Medic is available for any type of help he can give, although a lot of the discussions, of course, between the administration and ACA at this point. But as far as perhaps helping to explain those or identify other areas, I'm assuming you're available to do that.
Most definitely.
Anything else that should be brought up? The status of the next meeting that was kind of up in the air. We're going to wait primarily for the report back from the administration and ASEA on schedule. Based on that report, I'm sure Senator Kelly will schedule another meeting, whether it be before the session's over or after. Senator or Representative Lamar, do you have anything?
Nope.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.